Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this NFL preview edition of The Spread, presented by the Red Light Sports Network. Today's show, we are going to be talking about the normal things, anything from line movements, futures odds, value, wagering theory, and anything else that may arise. This program and website, CoverThatSpread.com, is for entertainment purposes only, and any questions you have regarding the legality of gambling and online wagering should be directed to your local and state legislative offices. However, if you do have the ability and wish to place wagers with a licensed bookmaker, please do so responsibly and be sure to square up with the United States government on April 15th. Sports wagering, just like any investment, for example, options, derivatives, hedge funds, and real estate, all these can lead to losses, so you must assess your own risk tolerance before you even start. I am your host, J.A., the Managing Director and co-founder of Cover That, and I am joined by my co-host, Vika Tach. How's it going, my man?
Going all right. Looking forward to talking some NFC South today, as well as talking to MLS and some of these club friendlies that we got going on, as well as the Gold Cup tournament.
Yes, and the Gold Cup tournament has been kind of exciting to watch. I know you've been complaining about the early round because a lot of teams, you know, they get that one win and suddenly they're just kind of playing back and they don't really care anymore because it's not a knockout round. So things are getting a little different now in the tournament. I also want to ask you a few questions because I don't think we've really had a good chance to talk about it, but the NBA, and let's start here today. With the NBA offseason, what has happened to change your mind about any of the contenders for this upcoming season?
Well, one of the big things we've seen is LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Spurs. You know, that's going to have a huge impact with them, adding a young big man that can kind of take over when Duncan leaves, re-signing Kawhi Leonard, re-signing Danny Green. You know, they let some of their other role players go, but bringing in Aldridge as well as David West has really, in my eyes, bolstered their front court with, you know, maybe not superstars, but stars. So they, you know, have guys that can come in and, you know, play good defense and have offensive weapons. So I look for them to be quite a bit better this next year to compete with teams such as the Clippers, who they struggled a little bit with in the postseason, obviously getting knocked out, and Golden State bringing back all their guys as well, minus David Lee, who wasn't really much of an impact during the regular season, but did have a few, you know, good games in the playoffs. But I think those teams you're really going to be looking at in the West, as well as the Clippers bringing back DeAndre Jordan, getting Paul Pierce, Lance Stephenson. That's going to be a big deal for them. On the East, nothing's really changed on the East. So we'll probably see Cleveland up near the top again, Chicago up near the top again. Maybe Milwaukee takes a step forward. But other than that, we'll still be looking at the Western Conference as being the conference to beat, and it's going to be extremely top-heavy this season.
Did the guys that the Bucks added, are they going to be, because I mean they gave the Bulls a good run for their money in that playoff series. Yeah, it was the first round. Yeah, they only made it to six, but you know, I felt like they were that team that seems like they're ready to break out. They've added a couple pieces this offseason. Did they add enough to make that next step next year?
You know, I think the Greg Monroe addition was probably the one that is going to have the greatest impact for them because it gives them a legitimate big guy that they can kind of go to in the post. You know, Zaza Pachulia was a big guy, but he was kind of just a bruiser basically there, you know, for the defensive aspect. He didn't really offer much on the way of offense. So now you have a guy who is pretty much a double-double machine in the league and, you know, be looking for Jason Kidd to really get him into the offense. And they had a great defense last year with those long athletic guys. Kind of reminded me of the Pacers back in 2011, I believe it was, the first round. You know, they gave the Bulls a really, really tough time. And then after that, they really became one of the favorites in the Eastern Conference, you know, mixing it up with Miami and a few conference finals. So I'd be looking at Milwaukee to be the team in the East to take the next step.
Do you think that the Pacers can recover?
You know, losing Roy Hibbert, I believe, is a big thing for them, as well as losing Lance Stephenson last year was big for them because Paul George was out. We'll see, you know, what happens with George coming. They also lost David West. So I don't believe that they'll be recovering. Luis Scola was a loss for them as well. So they lost a lot of their kind of go-to guys on that team. So I don't believe that they'll be up near the upper crust of the Eastern Conference. They may sneak in, you know, towards the end as an eighth seed, but I don't believe that they'll be a power as they have been in years past.
And finally, you had mentioned that you had mentioned the Spurs getting LaMarcus Aldridge, and you mentioned, you know, it's getting younger, but he's still like 27, 28 years old. So, I kind of odd when you're saying he's making your team younger, but, you know, you're absolutely right due to the age of the team. Now, he has had a little bit of injury issues in the past, which is a little bit of a concern, especially when you're talking about a team that's going to be probably depending on him to be that next superstar on their roster. Does Greg Popovich, do you think that played a big role into Aldridge's decision? Because the way that he likes to rest his starters, the way he likes to keep guys fresh, you know, he's not afraid of sitting out all of his three big guys in a single game because he knows it's more important about what you do in the off or in the postseason. So do you think that that played a big part in Aldridge's decision?
I think it did play a pretty big part in his decision. You know, the Spurs are always a team that's near the top of the Western Conference. It doesn't really matter, you know, who they lose or who they bring in because of those core guys that they've had with Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan. But those guys are all kind of, you know, getting up there in age. Like you said, Aldridge, you know, he's a little bit older, but with the fact that you stated how Popovich likes to kind of rest his stars, you know, I think that played a large part in it because with his injuries over the past few seasons, he's not a guy that can really go for 40 minutes a game. And, you know, some of the other teams that he was talking to, like the Lakers, you know, I'm sure they would be playing him over, you know, what he is readily available for because of his health issues. So with Popovich being that guy that likes to rest his star players, save him for the playoffs, and then even in the playoffs, really relies quite a bit on his bench, I think that did have a large impact on it and, you know, really ultimately help him make his decision in the end.
So what I just heard you say was that if the Bulls would not have traded him and he would have been on the roster while Thibs was the coach, there's a very good chance that he doesn't have two legs at this point in his life.
You know, that's quite possible. A lot of things would have been different because I'm not exactly sure who was the coach of the Bulls at that time, but, you know, trading Aldridge for Tyrus Thomas was a huge mistake, you know, on our part. But, you know, if that happens, it might not have led to us getting Derrick Rose or even Jimmy Butler down the road now. So in the end, who's to say if it was a good decision or bad decision, but definitely if he was playing for Tibbs, he would probably be ground out. You know, he'd have no knees or ankles left right now.
Yeah. Well, I want to say it was Skiles that was the coach when they drafted him, but it could have even been before Skiles because I can't remember exactly what year he came around, so it was a long time ago. That's the important thing. So before we get to soccer, we've got a couple of baseball plays. Two of them finished already. We had a three-unit play on the Cubs in the early game, and they got smoked against the Reds 9-1. So that was minus three units on that one. Then we also had Cleveland over Milwaukee. That was paying minus 113. Cleveland wins that one 7-5. So we are down just a little bit on today in baseball. We have one play pending. That pick is Mariners over the Tigers. Right now you can, I want to say at about plus 120 last time I checked. We are going to be taking Montgomery. He's looked good for the Mariners so far. Anibal Sanchez is going for the Tigers. Not that big on him and what he has been doing as of late. But this line is moving in Detroit's direction. So you may be able to get Seattle a little higher than 120 right now. Definitely higher than the 113 that we got earlier today. So that's a 7:08 first pitch. You've got about 27 minutes. So try to get that play in if you can. We still like the Mariners at this spot. So that's my baseball pitch. What do you got for soccer? Where are we at right now in the tournaments and in MLS?
So with the Gold Cup, we're into the semifinals here, as well as down in the South American tournament with Copa Libertadores. So there's two games going on in the Gold Cup tonight. We were playing the U.S. as a first half favorite. They were looking really bad at the beginning. Then in about the 25th minute, they started coming on strong. But since then, it's been all Jamaica. They just scored their second goal, so that bet is a loss. That also kills the parlay that we were going on tonight. You know, the U.S. has got another 55 minutes here to really turn this thing around, but it is not looking good for the U.S. right now whatsoever, just conceding that second goal before halftime. The second game, we had a draw play for Panama versus Mexico. That will be going on at about 7 p.m. Central Time this evening. Mexico has not been a very good first half team. Panama struggled with Trinidad in the last game, going to penalty kicks. Mexico also won on a late penalty. So, excuse me, we're looking for that game to be a first half draw. Down in South America with Copa Libertadores, we have Tigres from Mexico playing against Internacional from Brazil. Internacional has a 2-0 aggregate going into this game, so they don't necessarily need to win the game in order to advance. They just need to keep Tigres from scoring two goals. So we're looking, you know, at that game, and with Internacional being on the road as well, I believe we're playing a draw in that game. So that one is a strong play for a draw or even a Tigres win if you wanted to go that route. But Tigres is the favorite because they are playing at home. The other games that we have going on this evening are club friendlies, one in the Guinness International Champions Cup between Chelsea and the New York Red Bulls. The Red Bulls have played two games within the last 4 days and are coming into a third game, I guess you would say, in 5 days. So they won't have a lot of their better guys available for this evening's game. This is Chelsea's first preseason game, and they do have a lot of their star players available and some of their younger signings that they're bringing up. So we're looking at Chelsea to win this game. And then the other game that we have is Sunderland versus Toronto FC as a friendly. We're looking at Sunderland to win this game, as Michael Bradley, you know, one of the Toronto's best players, is currently on the U.S. national team. And we are also missing a injured Jozy Altidore with Toronto. So we'll be looking for Sunderland to win that game. And those are the plays that we have for this evening.
Have you been checking out the any of the lower-level soccer leagues in the U.S.?
You know, I don't pay too much attention to the North American Soccer League. You know, the MLS we've started to take, you know, more of a look at as we've, you know, started to get further into the season. But no, I haven't taken much of a look at the minor leagues or even the Open Cup that's going on between, you know, all of the club teams in the United States.
I was just asking because you had mentioned about Freddie Adu coming back to the United States and, you know, he's going to be playing for the Tampa Bay Rowdies right here by me. So I was just wondering if, you know, when a guy who's only, what, 26, 27 years old is in that spot and he's coming back to play, what is the equivalent in baseball? Like, is that a minor league team? Is that a triple A? Are we talking a double A here? You know, what, or are we talking even like further removed than that? Are we talking about, you know, Ricky Henderson going and playing in the international leagues until he was, you know, well into his mid to late 40s? What is the equivalent of the Tampa Bay Rowdies to a major league level?
Well, if you're looking at, let's say we compare the MLS to really the, you know, international game with other club teams, the MLS would probably be a triple A, you know, affiliate. And the North American Soccer League that the Rowdies are in would probably be double A. So you're looking at him going down there. He'll make an impact, I'm sure, especially because of the fact that the coach of the team was one of the assistants with the national team when Freddie Adu was, you know, playing with them, I believe, in the Olympics. So he's got a good relationship with the coach. He could have a decent impact because he's not a bad player. He does have some skill. And he, like you said, I mean, he's only 26, 27, so he's still young, relatively young. But he just never really found his niche or, you know, from what I hear, he wasn't really tough enough to really make it with any of the larger club teams that he was playing for. And I guess he has a little bit of an entitlement issue with the MLS clubs that he played with, which, you know, caused him to not be one of the favorites in the locker room. But hopefully, you know, he's able to turn his career around because he is still young, and it would be nice to see him get some fan support down there with the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
So, you know, I think that a big thing that could have really hindered his development and his growth was you've got to be able to play, and you brought it up, toughness, and you've got to learn that toughness. And sometimes it's more about playing against the competition that you need to be playing against. So a kid that goes into the MLS at the age of 14, it's almost like he skipped too many steps. You know, if he would have gone and played 4 years of high school and then made that jump, probably would have been a lot better off, you know, maybe it would have ended up just the same, but at least it would have given him a better chance to actually grow, because you're still developing, you know, your body's still growing. You still have a lot of things that you're trying to work out at the age of 14 that just does not seem like it would have transferred very well into a major league program. Do you think that, and I don't know where the standards are right now, but will we see that same type of plucking out of a high school kid in the near future, or at least a U.S.-born high school kid? Because we do know that some of the guys, you know, in like Major League Baseball, they're signing contracts overseas if they're 16. We've seen a lot of teams do that over the years with, you know, players in the Dominican and in other of the Caribbean islands. So where do you see his story shaping the way that they pluck and they get people into the MLS going forward?
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you bring that up because, it does come into play. We saw last year in the World Cup, you know, Klinsmann brought on Julian Green, who was only 18 at the time, but he was one of those players, like you said, who was playing overseas. So a lot of the larger club teams overseas will pluck guys that are like high school age, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, and they'll put them into development programs or even play with their B teams, which would really be like a double A here. I should say it'd be more like a triple A. It'd be more like the MLS, but the brand of soccer is so different. I think a lot of people forget about you know, the difference between European soccer and, you know, North American, Central American soccer, it's a lot more physical here. So I think that's why he struggled, because he wasn't, you know, a big body physically, which you don't necessarily need to be a good soccer player. We see guys like Messi, you know, who are small guys that are dominant, but the style of play is so different. Over in Europe, it's a lot more spread out, a lot more passing. Here in the North America, Central America, you see a lot more physicality. I mean, guys are always on you all the time, pushing you, pulling at you. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, American football, you know, is the biggest sport really here, and it is a physical sport. And then you look at basketball, I mean, guys are hand-checking and, you know, down in the post. It's a real battle. So I think that's why a lot of the younger guys do go overseas and compete in those academies that they have over there rather than going into the MLS now. And I think it is a cautionary tale, because Freddie Adu really did burn out, and he was really the first big one to do it. You will see some international guys, like from Honduras and Mexico, that do come up and play in the MLS when they're like 18, 19 years old, but I doubt you'll ever see another one that would be 14 years old making their professional debut here in the United States.
Yeah, I always thought it was weird, you know, going back to that time when he was signed by the with the DC United, and, you know, it was kind of being used to seeing the NFL system where you have to be in 3 years removed from high school to be eligible for the draft, or if you fail out of school before, you'd be ineligible to be signed by a team. You know, it's just so much different than seeing what was going on there. And I understand that MLS being so young, probably it never even came up, so they didn't think too much of it. And, you know, it's kind of a shame, because it would have been nice to see him develop as a high school, become, you know, maybe that mythological high school soccer player, and then move on to the professional leagues after that. But, you know, that is the way it went. He cashed a nice big check, and I am sure that he is doing quite all right, other than the fact that his career has not done what he was hoping it would do, but can't complain about the paycheck. So we've touched on the first four divisions of the NFL, and we've gotten both of the Eastern divisions, we've gotten both of the North divisions. Today we are going to talk about the AFC South. Now, let's go over the win total numbers first. I'm going to go over them. You're going to tell me what you like over or under, and then I am going to tell you what the favorite is. So, Houston Texans, their win total is set at 8.5. Over or under?
You know, I think that one will probably be under.
We've got Indianapolis, 10.5. Over or under?
I think I could possibly go with over in that one.
Jacksonville Jaguars, 5.5.
I think I might go under with that one.
And Tennessee Titans, 5.5.
I think I would probably go under with that one as well.
Okay. So, Houston, 8.5. I think I go over, which just happens to be the favorite. So, there's no way I'd actually be playing that one. Indianapolis, 10.5. I think I go over just on default. I don't see them falling under that, because they have four guaranteed wins in their division and probably five if you figure that they're going to split with Houston. There's no way Houston can sweep them. So that's five wins right there. They're pretty much halfway to 11. I feel good enough about the rest of their schedule, since they have the Jets, they have the Panthers, they have the Falcons, they have the Dolphins. So I would say they're over 10.5. Jacksonville, I have them under 5.5. That is actually paying plus money, which is kind of surprising. I did not expect people to be on any sort of Jaguars bandwagon, especially because from my standpoint of what I've been able to research, I just don't think they've gotten any better than where they were at the end of last season. I understand Blake Bortles may become, you know, make that second step or make that step into a second season. You know, I get that, but 5.5 wins for their schedule seems a little tough, and if you go under, you're getting a payout of +125. Would you take that?
I would take that. You know, looking over their schedule, it's not very favorable to start the season. And, you know, once you're kind of on that downward path, especially if you're a team that's, you know, synonymous with losing, like the Jaguars, I don't think that they'd really be able to turn that around and, you know, get over that 5.5 mark.
Yeah, I like Gus Bradley. I like what he's doing down there. I just don't think this is the year that they're able to make that step. And I really, my biggest doubts come from what I think is a very thin wide receiver group. And I understand that they did add Julius Thomas, but I just don't think it's enough for what you need out of a young quarterback. So, you know, Julius Thomas isn't a Tony Gonzalez. He is not an Antonio Gates. He's not the kind of tight end that's going to be going over the middle and catching 80 to 100 balls. You know, he may get up to that number just because there's no other better options, but he's not going to be the guy that's, you know, getting you really difficult yards every game. So I'm just not really sold on that. Not really sold on what they're they did draft TJ Yeldon, but I don't think that, you know, drafting a rookie running back in this system is going to make the difference of them winning 6 games or more. So I'm going under with Jacksonville. Also going under with Tennessee. That is the only team that the favorite is the under on right now. So thought that was a little interesting as well. Odds to win the division. Tell me which one of these you like. Houston, +315. Indy, -455. Jacksonville, 20-1. Tennessee, about 28-1.
Yeah, I really think it's, Indianapolis division to lose. So I think I would take that at -425, you said?
455.
455, yeah. I would definitely put my money on Indianapolis for that one. I think that Houston might be able to sneak in there, but I think Indianapolis is just too good right now.
Now, what concerns me with Houston as a team to compete for the division is I just am not really sure about their offense, which direction it's going to be going. We saw, you know, their big receiver leave during the off season. They did pick up Cecil Shorts, but, you know, that seems like a potential disaster waiting to happen. DeAndre Hopkins had a nice season last year, but at the end of the day, you still have to remember their quarterbacks are Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in either of those guys, so I don't really like the Texans' chances to be able to compete in Indianapolis. It's another reason why I'm thinking, did I say Houston was going over 8.5 or under 8.5?
I believe you said over.
I think I am changing my mind officially because Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett are not going to win a combined 9 games. So I think I'm going under on Houston, despite what I do like about the coach, Bill O'Brien. So I think I'm changing my mind. I think I'm going to go under 8.5 on them, which would be paying some positive money. Let's see what that one is at. We are looking for Houston. Under 8.5 only pays out +105, so nothing too special there. Colts, though, I think we're both pretty much told they are far and away the best team in this division. They've proved it the last couple of years now. Jacksonville is rated number 32 on our power rankings, which there will be a video up about Jacksonville this coming weekend. So we're just in post-production right now. We're going to be putting that up there about our little preview on the Jaguars. Tennessee is 30 or 20. I think they're 30. So that tells you right there the easy street that Indianapolis has to get to win this division, because that's four wins for them right there. Even Houston, you could argue, has four wins on their radar already as well. It's really going to come down to who can beat, or if they can beat Indianapolis. I personally don't think they can. So if you were, would you take any of these odds? To win the AFC, Indianapolis plus 380, Houston plus 1509. Do you like either of those?
Yeah, I would think about Indianapolis there. I believe they were on the verge last year. The whole Deflategate thing, although they were horrible in that AFC championship game, I think they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and really want to come out this year and let everybody know that, they are for real and, they can compete at that level again.
Are you confident enough in the talented players around Andrew Luck that offensively he's going to have enough?
Yeah, I think they do have a offensively gifted team. So I think Andrew Luck can get it done with the weapons that he has available.
They got Philip Dorsett from Miami in the first round. He's a wide receiver. They added a running back, Josh Robinson, late in the draft in the sixth round from Mississippi State. They went very hard on defense in the rounds in between. And, they definitely had some issues on defense the last couple of years now. I really like the spot that the Colts are in, because they could easily have this wrapped up by the start of December, and they can really just kind of let their guys rest. They have Andre Johnson at the one side. They have T.Y. Hilton on the other. You have Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. So, I like the options, and then they also drafted Dorsett. So you have, three, maybe four wide receivers if you count Moncrief. He came on, had some decent games last year. That's some good receiving options. You throw in a couple of good tight ends. Andrew Luck should not have any issues throwing for 4,500 to maybe even 5,000 yards. And that's a lot of yards to be throwing for. But the addition of Frank Gore, I think, should be just good enough at running back. You don't need a guy rushing for 1,500 yards. If him and Heron can do a really good job in a split role, I think this team could be really dangerous in the AFC, especially if they are really able to rest their guys and make sure that they are ready for the playoffs. And, then it's just going to come down to, can you win enough games to maybe get home field advantage? Because that, they got blown out by the Patriots. But if they would have been playing at home, things could have been a lot different the way that everything has supposedly gone down for the Patriots playoff games. But so if we're looking at the Super Bowl, odds to win the Super Bowl, Indianapolis plus 904. Do you like that number, and is this a real Super Bowl contender?
I think they have a lot of the pieces in place to be a Super Bowl contender. But with that large of odds, I'm not comfortable with taking them to really win, the AFC. The division definitely for the AFC and the Super Bowl, I don't think that they would be my pick. That would be an amazing payout if you did pick them and they did make it that far, but I don't think that they are. I think they're about a year away. We'll see how Frank Gore gets into it. We'll see how their defense plays, halfway through the season before I were to put any money on them to really be the favorite to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I would like them probably in about another year with that defense. I didn't see enough to make me feel comfortable with their defense, thinking that they've done enough to take enough steps big enough step forward. I wish you could parlay those two. If you parlayed plus 380 and plus 904, you'd be looking at a pretty good payout there if you could do that. But I mean, we'll have to see. I bet on five dimes they'd let you do that, because I think they'll let you do just about anything. But all right, so I think we're pretty much set. We both think Indy is winning this division. We don't think there's going to be much competition from either any of the other teams. One interesting thing to look at: Houston, obviously not really set at the quarterback position. Jacksonville is starting potentially the number two overall pick in the draft, and Tennessee is potentially starting last year's number eighth overall pick. That's a lot of young quarterbacks in this division. You know, you could be two, maybe three seasons away if both Mariota and Bortles take the next step. You know, we could be like 3 years away from having an AFC South powerhouse. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly kind of where I'm at. I think that they are close to being that powerhouse, which would be really interesting to see them, you know, after the transition that they've gone through, to really be at the top once again. So I definitely am on board with you there.
Yeah, it's interesting in the NFL watching the way these divisions kind of rise and fall over a short period of time. I remember a couple of years ago thinking that the NFC North was just a terrible division outside of Green Bay. And even Green Bay, I was having my questions about their coaching staff. And right now, they look like one of the stronger divisions in the league, minus the Bears. You know, you could say the Bears could potentially win seven or eight games, but they are by far the worst. You know, they're in the bottom probably five or ten teams in the NFL right now. Where they're projecting by a lot of people. So, you know, these things go fast. We've now seen two teams in the same division take some guys early. Even Andrew Luck, you know, we're talking about him like he's a seasoned veteran, but he was drafted in 2012. So he's not very deep into his career either. He just came into a much better situation than what was going on in Jacksonville and Tennessee the last couple of years here. So, you know, we could be seeing the start of a really high-powered division run by three quarterbacks that were all taken in the top 10 of their draft classes in a four-year span. So it's going to be interesting to watch that. We've got the rest of the division out here for the Super Bowl odds. Houston plus 37.54. Without a quarterback, no way I'm touching that one. Jacksonville plus 25.5. And 25,000. Tennessee plus 25,000 as well. So yeah, so you're paying 250 to 1 on both of those. That's one of those bets that if you're sitting in Vegas and you've got $100 left in your pocket and you say, "What the hell? Let's throw $10 on either of these teams and just pick the last 10. Let's put $10." on the 10 best Super Bowl odds and just see if any of them pay out. You know, it's not a bad strategy if you're just sitting around bored and you've got $100 burning your pocket. You know, you could have a really good payout. So, but chances are most likely not going to happen. And something that I will not be doing. So any of those Super Bowl odds do anything for you?
Outside of Indianapolis, none of those do anything for me. Unless, like you said, you got $100 left in your pocket and it's your last 100 and you're just like, whatever, I'm going to see. Roll the dice on this one. But that's kind of a last resort.
Yeah, you're either blowing it at the craps table on your way out the door, or you're going to throw it down and see if you can turn it into you know, $25,000 at the end of the football season. So, any last words revolving around the AFC North? I'm sorry, AFC South.
Nope, I've got no other words there for you. You know, I think it's pretty much like we said, it's Indianapolis all or nothing, really. So be looking at them really to win the division before the season even starts, based off of the, you know, moves that the other teams have made. Nobody really has a chance.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. So anything going on for soccer this weekend?
Yeah, we'll have the finish of the Gold Cup will be going on this weekend. We'll also have some more Brazilian League stuff going on, as well as, you know, some more friendlies with the International Cup of Champions. So we'll be looking for that as well. Also of note, looks like the U.S. did just score a goal, but it hasn't been verified yet. Looks like the referee was pulling something out of his pocket, so we're not 100% sure of what's going on yet.
I did want to ask you, we've got a couple of minutes, how are you feeling about the U.S. so far in this tournament? Obviously, you're betting them, so you felt pretty decent, but you know, we were texting a couple days ago, joking around about the Jamaican team and how we weren't expecting them to be coming out the way they've been playing. So how have you been feeling overall about the U.S. team? Tanacho, did I lose you? Well, looks like somebody fell off.
Hello, J.A.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just had to lose you for a second there. The U.S. was my pick to win it from the beginning. But, you know, they're not looking great right now. But it'd be great to see them come back. You know, they did just score that goal. They are pressuring again right now. So it could be something where, you know, they do come back and win this game, which would be amazing, being down 2-0. But really, they haven't flex their muscles against any teams that are really good so far in the tournament. So Jamaica, you know, is putting up a great fight, but Jamaica had a really easy road to this point as well. So if they come back and win this game, they're still my odds on favorite to win the tournament.
All right. Well, I will, we will be keeping an eye on them and watching out for them. So another good show. Thank you very much for joining. And be sure to, get those plays tweeted out for everybody so we can make some money this weekend betting on soccer. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. Join us next week, and also be sure to be following me on Twitter so you can see when we get the NFL previews started. They should be coming out this weekend. We're really excited to get our thoughts out there about each individual NFL team. So for the Red Light Sports Network and Cover That Spread, he is Casacho, I am J.A. Good luck this weekend betting, and may the spread be forever in your favor. Take care, guys.